Joining us this hour to talk about that remarkable feat are Michael Bauman. Michael Bauman is... He's my husband. I forget we're on the radio. It's going to be one of those hours you forget you're on the radio. National columnist for MLB.com. He's been covering baseball for a long time. He actually covered in 1982 the playoffs and the World Series, and he will, at least for the first part of this playoff competition, be covering the Milwaukee Brewers. Mike, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for being with us.
It's terrific to be with you on any occasion, Kathleen.
Really? On any occasion?
Right.
What a nice...
Well, sometimes dinner not. But no, for the most part, yes.
Well, that's nice to hear. Good. Also, Andrew Dunbauman is joining us. This is a first for all of us. Andrew asked me, well, he's been asking me for years now, but he asked me at the beginning of the season, Mom, if the Brewers make it to the playoffs, can I be a guest on your show to talk about the Brewers? And I said, yes, of course you can. And here he is. And he actually has been doing a lot of baseball as well. He's a student at UWM. He's an intern now at ESPN here in Milwaukee and is a former play-by-play announcer for WRST for the baseball team at the University of Wisconsin. Oshkosh, Andrew, hello.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What are you going to call me, Mom?
I don't think so. That's not really professional.
Oh, okay.
I got to keep a little more professional than that.
Okay, even though your mom and dad are on the air with you this hour. Yeah. So I tried to raise, you know, a Lincoln Scholar, but, you know, it's baseball, right, Mike?
Well, he wasn't pushed in that direction by me. He chose this on his own, and I'm proud of him one way or the other.
Yeah. As you said yesterday, and it's very true, how nice it is to have a really good baseball club.
It's been 29 years since there was a club this good.
Really? They're better than they have been for 29 years?
By record, you know, by the division championship, any reasonable measurement, that's them. And so they just set the franchise record for most victories at home in a season, 55. So you could go out to Miller Park fairly secure in the knowledge you're going to see a good game, and the chances were a Brewers victory. So it's been a long time since you could make that statement.
Mm-hmm. And you, of course, weren't even born in 1982, Andrew. So what do you think of this team?
It's pretty impressive because, as you said, it's been 29 years since the Brewers have been this good. But for me, for all of my 19-plus years, the Brewers have been a futile team in the Milwaukee region. And I really haven't seen a team that's been successful other than 2018. And even that, it was a minor success, really. They weren't expected to compete with the Phillies, and they didn't really in their playoff series. So for me, it's been great because I grew up with a mediocre team. I've never seen a great team in Milwaukee, and I've always had to struggle as being a Brewers fan. But I do have to contest. I mean, you don't really get to change the channel when you're 5-6 years old. Baseball was always on in the household, so maybe I wasn't forced into it, but I had a little bit of influence, yeah, I think, from my parents, particularly from my father.
Baseball was always on in the house, Mike. It's true.
What were the options? You were going to watch American Idol?
That wasn't on back then.
Thank you, Andrew.
There was no American Idol back then.
I watched it when...
Is it baseball or some bad sitcom?
I don't watch bad sitcoms.
Right. No, but I'm not saying you would, but that's the rest of America might have.
Yeah.
I think, you know, baseball is one of humankind's best inventions.
Really?
It's not like TNT. It's not like cannons and tanks. It's a thoughtful, nonviolent activity that, you know, that takes you... And then also it's a conversational thing, and you can sit at the ballpark for 3 hours and talk to your friends and family, whoever you went with, or sit and watch TV, the same thing. It's a tremendous socialization thing.
Well, I'm not sure, being the wife of one of you and the mother of another, that you can go to a baseball game with either one of you and have a nice conversation about things. You two are intent. You're watching the game. You're keeping the
score.
You're
there for the game,
absorbed.
You're not there for whatever else is going on outside of the game. Miller Park is a place where you lose the outside world and you're engrossed in the activity for 3+ hours. And that's what's so great about the game for me, is I've grown up with baseball and it's been a sort of comforting thing. It's a beautiful game to watch. There's so many minor details, thousands of them going on, and you can pay attention to all of them at once. And it's just quite an amazing feeling for me to be able to get lost in a game like that. And there's no other game that can do that for you.
Huh. See, my heart beats a little faster when he talks like that, because that means he's absorbed. It's almost genetic, the whole thing. And I can recall vividly one time this was at Old County Stadium, and there had been a rainout. And so there's going to be a doubleheader, and all five of us, all three sons and you and I, Kathleen, went to the game. And you took along the Sunday New York Times. And you were sitting here reading the Sunday New York Times when Andrew, out of nowhere, said, Mom, you're embarrassing the entire family.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
I hope you're over it by now. I got to tell you, if I get a chance to go to any of the playoff games, I will not read the New York Times.
Good, good.
I will watch this completely. And let me just ask both of you, because I know that Andrew just called it a beautiful game, and I know that you love this game, too. You've covered a lot of other sports. What is it about baseball? What do both of you think it is about baseball that's beautiful about the sport, that's obviously endlessly fascinating to both of you? Mike?
Well, I think partly of what just Andrew just said, that there are so many things that could happen. And you sit there watching the game, and you think about all the variations that could occur and strategical, tactical moves that could be made by the manager, and who's at the plate, who's in the field, where are the fielders playing? You know, what's the situation? It's all happening concurrently. And you can go to the ballpark, you know, thousands of times. And every day, every time you do that, there's a possibility you'll see something you never saw before. And plus, the game is timeless in the sense that there is no time limit. You know, when the Red Sox and the Yankees play, it's like Methuselah. You know, you're aging, and well, it's still going on. But you know what I'm saying? It's open-ended in a way that no other sport is.
Andrew?
Well, I can't really put it any better than that. So that pretty much sums it up. I mean, I think the pace of the game also lends itself to being such a beautiful game, because there's a lot of people who don't follow baseball think it's because it's too slow of a game, but really that's what makes it such a beautiful game, is that there's so many different things going on and there's so many things that you can pay attention to, because it's not exactly the most quickly paced game ever. But that's what's so great about it, is there's so many different things that are going on that you just have to pay attention to what's going on around you to see all these different things in motion in the span of one 3-hour game. There's so many different things you can take away from it.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain players on this team that both of you watch intently? You really think they bring great personality to the game. They bring an extraordinary amount of skill. Is there more than one player who fits that bill, Mike?
Well, I think Prince Fielder. I mean, Ryan Braun is obviously a great talent, and you watch him because he's such a great talent, and you watch Nigel Morgan because you don't really know what he's going to do next.
Right.
Is he, you know. But Prince Fielder, if you watch him play over a number of games, tries as hard as probably anybody, you know, in baseball. His level of effort is always extraordinary. And it's true, he doesn't have the classic, you know, baseball player's body or anything remotely like that. But his level of effort, he plays every game, and almost some seasons he plays every inning of every game. That's rare these days, too. And so I like to... I appreciate that, you know, him running out ground balls, him running out pop flies. That's the way the game ought to be played, and he knows that, and he's the embodiment of that.
Mm-hmm. Andrew?
I would agree with that, Prince Fielder, because he very quietly plays 162 games every season. People don't really talk about that because they get wrapped up in his power and the numbers that he puts up, but really, he's there every single game, he plays every game, and he's not going to leave unless you physically pull him out of the game. So Prince Fielder is a great example to follow. Guys like Nigel Morgan, like he said, bringing a great amount of energy to the Brewers, and every team needs that, but maybe not so much as he has. Sometimes he's a little over the top with it, but everybody needs an energy kind of guy. I think guys like John Axford are a model of consistency. He set the Brewers' single-season franchise record for number of saves in a season. I remember early in the season, people were so quick to jump off of his bandwagon because of the start that he had on the very first game of the season, blowing a save in Cincinnati, and people are thinking, well, is he just going to be another Derek Turnbull type of situation? But he didn't let it get him, it didn't let him rattle him, and he's been perfect the rest of the season almost, and he's been pretty much untouchable. And I think he's really the kind of level-headedness you need at the back end of your bullpen, especially to save games. You need someone who's very cool and is not going to get rattled. Ryan Braun, obviously a great person to have in Milwaukee. He really loves playing for the Brewers, as you can tell, because he signed the contract extension. And he's really the player that everybody looks to if you're a Milwaukee Brewers fan, and sees who's your guy. He's your all-star, pretty much. Ryan Braun is your franchise player. So I think they've got a great group of guys together that they've built together for a special season here in 2011. And I think all the pieces are coming together very well for the Brewers.
Yeah. Axford is an interesting guy, isn't he, Mike? I mean, think of how your fortunes can change so rapidly. He was selling cell phones not that long ago, and look at what he's doing now.
Yeah, and he's a perfect example of what Andrew was talking about. Is a guy who's, you know, has come out of nowhere. Literally, he was released by the Yankees. I mean, and, you know, this is the number one team in terms of wealth and power in baseball, and they didn't like him well enough to keep him. You know, and look what's happening now. Canadian, he's extraordinarily well read. He likes to read Dante. He's a bright fellow. He's more than one part to him. And he's got that great kind of handlebar mustache thing going on.
Right.
Interesting, at that, you know.
It's more of a Fu Manchu now kind of thing he's got going on. He's growing it downwards.
Yeah. I've always wondered what it would be like, because you know what it's like. We get along real well on vacation, and most of the time we have our arguments. But I'm wondering what it would be like to be with this group of players. All of these days, they play so many baseball games. They're with each other on the airplanes. They're at the ballpark all the time. They're in all these different cities. How does a group function like that for such a long period of time? And what will they be doing that might be special as a group as they go into the playoffs? Mike?
I think what these guys always talk about is how close-knit they are. And that probably is increasingly difficult to find in Major League Baseball. People have disparate interests, and they're off in 25 different directions. But these guys make a point of talking whenever they have the opportunity about how close they are. And I think that's true. I think there aren't any apparent villains in the clubhouse. You know, there's other clubs you can point to two or three people and say, well, this guy's really out of step with everybody else, and they're only putting up with him because he gets hit, that kind of thing. I don't see any of that in this clubhouse. You walk in, and it's all smiles. I mean, they like each other. They like being there. They realize they're gifted with being able to play this game for a large amount of money.
Right.
And that, you know, and they're being successful at it, which really makes the whole, I mean, you are, because as you pointed out, Kathleen, you're together from mid-February, when spring training starts, until at least the end of September, and if you're good enough, well into October. That's a long, long time.
That is a long
time. Day.
That is a long time. Andrew, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think it's almost surprising how much they can handle each other, as you said, because, I mean, guys like Nigel Morgan, I think we get on people's nerves after a while. Not saying Nigel Morgan is someone who you wouldn't like to be around, but all that energy for so many days of the year, for so many consecutive days, there's only, you get maybe one day off a week aside from the All-Star break. And other than that, you're constantly around each other. You're at the ballpark 3-4 hours before the game, and you're there till late into the evening. And I think their ability to have fun together is really something that's special for this team. And a lot of guys don't seem to have as much fun as the Brewers do. A lot of teams, it's almost like a lot of teams take offense to how much fun the Brewers have because they think it's against their team because they come to their ballpark and they're celebrating a little bit too much. It's a little bit too flashy sometimes, people think, in conventional baseball wisdom. But really, it's just a group of guys that are genuinely having a good time together, and that's really something that's fun to watch for the fans of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. And yet they're also getting paid a lot of money. Without being too negative about this, you know that, because I've railed against this at the kitchen table time and time again, they may enjoy each other completely and love the team they're on, but once you become a free agent, another $1 million or $10 million is going to lure you to another team and then forget that camaraderie that you had. Why is money so big in this game, and is it detrimental to the sport?
Well, Kathleen, I mean, money is big in this game because it's big in American society.
Right.
And rightly or wrongly, people are oftentimes measured by how much money they make. And this is no different than any other endeavor. So if you're a Prince Fielder, and I think that's what we're talking about here, because he's very likely to leave town as a free agent after this season, you're measured not only by your average, your home runs, or your runs batted in, but you're measured in real terms by the amount of money you make. And if you think you're the best hitter out there or that position, you want more money than anybody else's. And your agent has been whispering that in your ear ever since you signed. You know, that's their function in life. So all of that is sort of free market at work, you know, and it's unfortunate because you have an association with Prince Fielder and this franchise and these fans, and it's difficult to watch that happen sometimes. But again, it's no different than any other aspect of society in that regard.
I understand that, but wouldn't it be nice if somebody broke away from that, considering the fact that we have a huge unemployment rate in this country right now, that a lot of people can't find a job? Wouldn't it be something if somebody like Fielder, and he's not alone, there are other people who will become free agents, said, you know, there are some things in life that are more important than making another million or another $10 million. I like the camaraderie of this team. I love the Milwaukee fans. I'm going to stay here. It's not, you can't even consider it a pay cut. It's a huge amount of money.
It's a little bit disheartening to see how many players opt out of the team they play for just to find more money. It's extremely rare to find instances of someone who took less money to play for a team or to play to win. Cliff Lee was one of those instances who he went from the Texas Rangers and turned down what would have been a bigger contract probably to go play for the Philadelphia Phillies because he knew that there's a team that has a chance to do something special, and they are doing something special this season. They're obviously the team to beat going into the playoffs. But it is extremely disheartening to see that there's not really as much of a loyalty to a city or a team as there has been in the past, that it's really just about where am I going to find the biggest payday and how do I get to the biggest payday. It's really very rare. Maybe Ryan Braun is somewhat of one of those instances because he took a contract extension where he possibly could have found a bigger one, but really he took the guaranteed money, so it wasn't like he was taking a huge cut. He still got a huge contract in Milwaukee for all those years. So as a fan, it really would be nice to see somebody who took a pay cut just to play for their team or for their city, but unfortunately, it's just very rare to find nowadays.
Yeah. Just think of the big splash they could make, though, Mike. They'd be all over the talk show circuit, and they could make a political point and a point about unemployment and a point about how much is enough and the rich having too much and all of that, right?
Well, I'm not sure that Cliff Lee is on a talk circuit. He's prominent. I mean, he definitely did. He took his hand and said, not only the Texas Rangers, but the New York Yankees were offering him more money. I mean, he's being more, offered more money everywhere, and he really liked playing with Philadelphia during the time he spent there. And he thought that was an ideal situation for him, and it turns out he's right.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take some phone calls for both of you. We're talking about the Milwaukee Brewers this hour because they had the incredible game on Friday. They clinched the National League Central Division, and for all the baseball fans out there, we thought we would talk about where they go now and what makes this team so unique. And what it does, we haven't spent much time talking about how a community responds to an event like this, because it's great for the city of Milwaukee, certainly, but also for the state to have this happen. We have two guests with us, and they are both related to me. It's not a requirement to be on this show. You don't have to be related to me, but I live with baseball guys, and I've been listening to them talk about this for years and years and years and years, so why not have them on the radio after such a big event as a Friday? Mike Baumann, national columnist for MLB.com, is our guest, and Andrew Dunbauman, our son, UWM student, ESPN Milwaukee intern, and he's done some play-by-play baseball announcing as well. You can tell he loves baseball. So to you in a moment, 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Blue and yellow, blue and yellow, blue and yellow, blue and yellow. I'm repping for my team, put that on everything. Blue and yellow, blue and yellow, blue and yellow, blue and yellow. Weeks and Hart and Bronny will lead off. Dennis Prince set the plate and he's ready to send it off. Get up. Get up, get out of here, gone. Messing with the Brewers, there was bodily harm. We leave them beaten and bruised, and we barely amuse. We always murder teams, so we stand accused. And this ain't recess, unless you count how we school ya. Bob Uecker screaming out, hallelujah. Oh yeah, uh-huh, you know what it is. We got MB tatted on our eyelids. And when we seeing dirt, we ain't saying nothing. World Series ring, yeah, that's stunting. Pull up in your town. We welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Let's go to Scott in La Crosse first. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hey, Scott.
This is a hat trick for me. I've talked to you, obviously, a lot. I've talked to Michael a couple times. Now, I've got a question for your very well-spoken and intelligent son, if you don't mind me saying so.
No, I don't mind that at all, Scott.
That's okay. You can handle that. And you. Andrew, let me ask you something, sir.
All right.
Do you think you are an anomaly, or do you think you're more representative of your generation than a lot of us older folks who have been sort of thinking that baseball was not a sport that's geared well for these fast-paced sports center highlight days? you know, way too slow, way too cerebral. What do you think about your peers? Do you have many friends who are also baseball fans, or are you kind of a rarity?
Well, I've always said a couple people have asked me this question before, and I think it's a little bit tough for me to answer because you can't really be around me if you're not somewhat of a baseball fan, because it's tough to deal with me over the summer months because it's really what I'm obsessed with. So my friends are pretty much all baseball fans to at least some extent, because otherwise I don't think they'd be friends with me. But I think it is a good point that you make, that a lot of kids nowadays follow football and basketball a lot more than baseball because of how society is geared nowadays, fast-paced information all the time. And baseball isn't really that kind of sport. It's more conversational, slow-paced kind of sport. I think it is a little – it's disappointing that not as many people are baseball fans, kids especially nowadays, because baseball doesn't lend itself to that kind of fast-paced highlight kind of sport. So I think that is true, that kids nowadays aren't as much geared towards watching baseball as other sports, and it's disappointing. But as far as personally – all my friends, yeah, there still are a lot of baseball fans out there because I'm friends with them.
One more quick question, if I might.
Yes, of course.
Are you like your dad there? Favorite kind of game, which mine is the pitcher's duel.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful thing to watch, a pitcher's duel. A lot of people hate it, but it's a great thing to watch. It's a good baseball game. You know it is when it's a pitcher's duel.
You bet. Man after my own heart. Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work, all three of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much, Scott. What is MLB doing, Mike, to make sure that a younger audience is going to be around to enjoy this slower game in the years ahead? Are they worried about that? Well,
the pace of game has been a huge issue with them. And there are constantly people trying to figure that out and shorten the games. I'm not so sure that the actual baseball fans who go out to the park are troubled by this. I think that people say, well, this game lasted 3 hours instead of 2.5. Boy, I'm never coming again. No. You know, I think that people savor that sometimes. But in terms of trying to attract the younger demographic, sure. I mean, that's been a big issue. They like things that, as Andrew said, at a highlight reel kind of pace. And baseball,
right.
That, so you have to adjust.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott, so much for your call, as always. Tom in Stevens Point, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen and family. I know you were hoping the Brewers would clinch the division over the weekend, as they did, Kathleen, but I'm on my way to Milwaukee today for the game, and I was hoping it would happen tonight.
I know. Andrew's going to work it tomorrow night. He was a little jealous it happened on Friday, right, Andrew? Right.
Yeah, I have some.
But I am thankful for a domed stadium. And I guess looking back, and I was a senior in college in 1982, and there's not much that we have that connects then with now. Different stadium, different owner, obviously different players. But the constant thread through all these years is Bob Uecker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I haven't been very attentive to the Brewers sometimes from year to year, you could always turn on the radio and there was Bob Uecker, and you always felt like you were kind of back at County Stadium or Miller Park. And I'm wondering if Michael could talk a little bit about the importance of Bob Uecker in the Brewers tradition.
Yeah, absolutely. He is, as you correctly state, the face of the franchise over time. He's the one thing that, he is so closely associated with this franchise. And that happens to a handful of really great broadcasters. I mean, for instance, Vin Scully with the Los Angeles Dodgers, Ernie Harwell for many, many years, the Detroit Tigers. You can just go down the list. They're so good, and they're so perfect for their time and place, that they become part of the continuum with the baseball team. And Bob Uecker certainly achieved that status a long, long time ago, and he's still going at it, and people just love to listen to him. The thing that separates him from a lot of announcers is it can be a bad game, and it's still a good broadcast.
Right.
Because of his sense of humor. He's tremendous.
He is tremendous. He really is an exceptional broadcaster. When you think about all the time he has to fill day after day, and he's endlessly interesting, and he's just he's good. He's just really good. You must like him a lot too, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm extremely fortunate to have grown up with a broadcaster for the Brewers, such as Bob Uecker, especially when they weren't so good through the entire 90s, because Bob Uecker, I think, is almost at his finest when the Brewers are not, because he's so entertaining to listen to, and especially when the Brewers are out of contention towards the end of the season. Many years I've listened to Bob Uecker still, because I pay attention to every game, regardless of the Brewers are in contention or not. And he's gets to his storytelling, and he's just extremely entertaining to listen to, even when he's not talking about what's going on particularly at the game. And that's what you need, especially from a radio announcer who has so much time and space to fill when it comes to a game such as baseball. And Bob Uecker's one of the best at what he does.
Yeah, he sure is. We should spend a little bit of time, both of you, talking about what happens now. You know, looking at what the Brewers' chances are for being able to beat the Phillies. They will ultimately have to play them sometime during the playoffs. And if this team can be on the streak they've been on for a while now and remain really, really competitive. Mike?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical that the Brewers maintain the home field advantage right now. They're one game ahead of the Arizona Diamondbacks in that category. But the Diamondbacks are winning the tiebreaker because they won in the head-to-head season series this year. So you'd like to avoid playing Philadelphia in the first round. And if you don't have the home field advantage, that's what's going to happen. So it's a double whammy in that sense. And we don't even know who the wild card team is yet, St. Louis or Atlanta, which is leading by a game. So it's up in the air even 3 days from the end of the season. But the home field advantage, especially with the Brewers having the best record at home in the major leagues, would be incredibly important.
Mm-hmm. I almost tend to disagree with that a little bit, because there is a school of thought, to play the devil's advocate a little bit here, that there's no way that the Brewers are going to be able to compete with the Philadelphia Phillies in a best-of-seven series. And if the Milwaukee Brewers get home field advantage in the first round of the series, first series of the postseason, whether it be against the Atlanta Braves or against the Arizona Diamondbacks, they're almost inevitably going to have to face the Phillies at some point during the postseason. So they might have a better chance competing against the Phillies. They're going to have to play the Phillies on the road either way. Phillies have the best record in the National League. They're going to have home field advantage. So they're going to have to play them either in a five-game series or a seven-game series, either of which will have to be on the road. So the Brewers might have a better chance taking the Philadelphia Phillies in the first round and beating them in 3 out of 5 rather than 4 out of 7, because almost any team would be mismatched against the Phillies. I'm not quite sure about that. I don't, like Mike said, the Brewers are a very good home team. I don't know if I'd rather see them play the Phillies in best of five or best of seven. I don't know.
Mike?
I was just thinking that if this show replicated what happens at home, that you two would be talking and I would be listening, and that was just what happened.
No, it's you two talking baseball, and I'm listening.
No, and Andrew has a thought there that's original as opposed to mine, but he makes a valid point. I happen to disagree with it, but he makes a good argument for it.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Earl is next in Medford. Hi, Earl.
Hi, hey, good morning.
Hey, Earl.
I have a quick frustration and then a question. My frustration is, all the years I was growing up in Milwaukee, I was never able to get a new Mickey Mantle baseball card. It was very frustrating. I had a used one for about half of my stock, but never got a new Mickey Mantle. But now my question is on, like, players like Sabathia, who said he wanted to keep playing with Milwaukee, but that the union vetoed a possible deal because it wasn't up to market for his kind of pitcher. Can the union really do that, veto any deal?
No, they can't. But, for instance, they couldn't veto the Cliff Lee deal with Philadelphia. But they will put pressure on an individual player to take the highest number. And that's what happened in that case. I mean, so it's peer group pressure from the union. They have the other 24 teammates and the whole institutional pressure that they bring to bear, and that's what happens in a case like that. But they can't step in and tell them where to sign.
Thanks, Earl, for the call. Dave in Wanakee, we have some lines open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, in the spirit of reducing the costs and everything, since the owners are the bank, basically, why don't they reduce the price of the tickets and the price of parking and things like that? Show us the way. They're the, multi-millionaires?
I think in the case of the Milwaukee franchise, if you're selling 3 million tickets at current prices, there's not much chance you're going to reduce those prices. I know exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate it. But at the current market, that's probably not going to occur.
We should talk about the fans for a moment, because, what is it, 3 times in 4 years now, the Brewers have gone over 3 million in attendance, which has to be a pretty remarkable thing, isn't it? considering the size of the market. We're not New, obviously, we're not New York.
Yeah, and on a per capita basis, this is the best attendance in baseball by a long shot.
Really?
And it's extraordinary. This place has a long and proud history of being a really good baseball town. It was the first National League franchise to draw 2 million people back in the 50s. And again, it wasn't any bigger then, you know. Well, it's remarkable because it's all uphill competition. Every single market is larger than this one, and they all generate more revenue in that regard. But this place is supported by a fan base that's completely loyal, devoted, and patient. Extraordinary patient. So yeah, this is it's a tribute to Milwaukee as a baseball fan, as a baseball market, and as a baseball city.
Yeah, it is. It must be very exciting for you, Andrew, to be a young person who loves baseball so much, to have them. I know 2008. They were wild card, but this year it's more significant. Talk about the difference in the experience, because a lot has been made, you know, referring to 2008, the difference, and what it's like as a young person who's essentially waited your whole life for your favorite team to win a World Series.
Yeah, well, it feels like it's been a long time coming for me. I think I've been waiting for this moment a long, long time, and I'm proud to say that I have never been a fair-weather fan of Milwaukee Brewers, that I've stuck by them through thick and thin for many years, and that is finally appearing to pay off, hopefully, for the Brewers. I think this year, Brewers fans in 2008 were excited because they were going to the postseason, they were a wild card, and obviously that's exciting for the entire city. But this season, there's a much more sense of realistic opportunity here for the Milwaukee Brewers to go even just beyond not just making the playoffs, but to make a push for the NLCS and the World Series. I think if you look at their pitching in particular in 2008, their starting rotation for the postseason was Giovanni Gallardo, who's pitched a lot better this season. He's been very consistent this season. CC Sabathia, who is a very good pitcher in baseball, but a lot of people wondered if him pitching on short rest so much in 2008 affected his postseason appearances, and he hasn't really been that good of a postseason pitcher. If you look at his numbers, he hasn't been the same pitcher during the regular season as he is during the postseason, so he had a bit of a rough postseason for the Brewers in 2008. You have Dave Busch, who ended up being the only one to actually win a game for the Brewers, which is surprising, in that 2008 NLDS against the Philadelphia Phillies. And then you have Jeff Suppan, who the Brewers signed for millions of dollars based off of one postseason series he had with the St. Louis Cardinals, who really wasn't very good at all with the Brewers. If you look in 2011, now you've got Giovanni Gallardo, Zach Greinke, Sean Markham, and Randy Wolf, all four of which are very useful options to have in the postseason in 2011. So you look right there, and pitching wins championships in Major League Baseball. And if you look in their starting rotation, just that alone, not to mention their bullpen, is tenfold times better than it was in 2008. So I think Brewers fans know this, and I knew this in 2008. I mean, I was excited, but I didn't really think the Brewers had a realistic opportunity. But in 2011, people believe that the Brewers really can do it this year, that this is our year to give something special to the city of Milwaukee and to go to the World Series. And I really hope to see it, because I've been waiting for it for a long, long time.
Not as long as some of the other people listening, but I understand your desire for this. Mike, what about the pitching on this team?
Makes all the difference. That's what separates this team from the team they've been having for the last 29 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually, you can make the point, you can make the argument very easily, as Andrew was just referring to. This is actually a pitching-first club that you do have. You have these wonderful offensive talents like Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder, but that the really most important component of this team is the starting rotation that Andrew just referred to, and also a wonderful bullpen with John Axford setting the saves record for the franchise, and the whole thing being stabilized with Takashi Saito coming back from injury, and then the Brewers trading for Francisco Rodriguez. The bullpen has been extraordinarily good, so they have no real weak spots in the entire pitching side of the operation.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right now, it's a better operation than the offensive part of the operation.
Hmm. Let's go to Patty in Green Bay. Hi, Patty.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Well, congratulations. We finally got our own championship. You know, I was saying on the screener, I said that, you know, I think it's a historical tie that's about baseball that brings generations together. And my mom's 91, and my son is 15. And when he was little, Grandma, always, when she was at our house, would always listen on the radio to Bob Uecker, and started our 5-year-old listening on the radio with her. And it was amazing. That's how he he follows baseball. He likes it more on the radio. He likes it more when he's playing, but he likes to listen to it more on the radio than anything else to get that visual. He can be down playing on his PlayStation and have the radio going and just listening to the games. Even though, much to our chagrin, he's decided that he's a Cubs fan, but we're hoping.
Oh, no, Patty.
This year, I know, I can't help it. I remember the year after my dad died, when the baseball season was over, my mom said, oh, it's going to be such a long winter. And every day she had that game on. And one of my parents' first dates was the Milwaukee Braves game. But that's why I want Milwaukee to play Atlanta. I think that would be perfect, and then to beat the Braves in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that'd be good. Mike?
Oh, that's fascinating, because a lot of people here, just as this lady, are still, you know, they're still aggrieved about the Braves leaving for Atlanta. You know, I mean, and that was, what, 1965? So 46 years. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's still fresh with some people. And a lot of people that I talk to just bring that up unilaterally and start talking about, I hope to play Atlanta so we can beat them. They stole the Braves.
I'd just like to add my condolences to your son for being a Chicago Cubs fan, because there's not a lot of hope in the future of the Cubs anytime relatively soon, and that's been a great source of joy for Milwaukee Brewers fans, obviously, the failures of the Chicago Cubs.
It was great to watch everybody rooting for the Cubs on Friday night, wasn't it?
It was
one of those moments that will not happen again for a long time. I just had a brief question for both of you, because I've never understood this. Teams going on hot streaks and then cool streaks. With so many players involved in baseball, why do some weeks seem to be really bad for a team and other weeks are really good? What factors are at play, Mike?
Well, I think it's just the fact that you play so long. I mean, 162 game season, not counting spring training or the postseason, that you're bound to have time. You can't maintain the same level individually or collectively for the entire length of time. So you're bound to have hot spots and you're bound to have these slumps at some point. You don't know when they're coming, and it's inexplicable, man. After the Phillies just clinched their division, they lost, what, 8 straight games? And this club is going to win 100 games, you know.
Right.
So they had some people who were a little nicked up, and they weren't playing the regular lineup all the time, but still they should have won some of those games. And nobody could explain it. But that's part of the mystery, the magic of the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. I think it has a lot to do with individual streaks as well over the course of such a long season. Baseball is a team sport, obviously, collectively, but it's broken down into a lot of individual efforts. When you're up at the plate, you're the only person there with a bat in your hands. You're the only one who has the opportunity to make something happen. When you're on the mound as a pitcher, it's you and the batter and your catcher. And you're the one who has the ball in your hand every single time. It's not everybody behind you. They're there to make plays for you, but really it comes down to what kind of pitch you can make to make that batter miss. And I think a lot of times when your better players are going through slumps or going through streaks where they're not making clutch plays or not getting the big hits when you need them or getting the strikeouts when you need them, that has a big effect on what happens overall for your team's chemistry.
Mm-hmm. We talked about this some the other night, Mike, but I'm wondering just psychologically, and you said that it separated those who play well from those who play great. When Ryan Braun was up there in the 8th inning on Friday night, and you know, I think he got a 3-1 count, and then he hits this home run. And you can see he's really intense. You can see it in his face, but he's got to be relaxed in a way, too, to see the balls that are coming instead of just striking at anything. How in the world can you keep your composure with all those people waving all of their towels and everybody making all kinds of noise and knowing how important this is?
Well, I think you just said that, Kathleen, that the great ones warm to a moment like that. They hope for it.
Mm.
They want to be in the spotlight. They want all the pressure on them. They want to be the one who wins the game. And they're willing to take the chance that they'll be the one to lose the game. And that's what separates them from not only the rest of us, but even the rest of the baseball players. And obviously, Ryan Braun, when you look at his record in clutch situations, and Fielder too to a certain extent, there's no question, he meets that test. And you can hear, I think, Jack McKeon, who's managing the Florida Marlins, you know, and is 82 years old and has been around forever, was asked if there was one player in both leagues, if he was managing in the postseason this year, and there's one player in both leagues that he wouldn't want to face in a pressure situation, who would it be? And he said Ryan Braun.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Testament.
Yeah.
And I think when you're a player of the caliber of Ryan Braun and you step in a game-winning situation, you don't hear any of that extra noise. You don't pay attention to the fans waving their towels and making huge decibels of noise. You let it build on the way up, and you take that energy to the plate with you. But as soon as you step in the batter's box and dig in and you face down the pitcher, everything sort of just disappears. And there's nothing but pure concentration on what's the task at hand, and what he's going to throw, what pitch he's going to throw is you and the pitcher, and everything else kind of disappears if you're Ryan Braun. And I think it's that pure concentration that really helps a lot of hitters out who are the better hitters in the game.
We're talking about the Milwaukee Brewers this hour of our program, and they are, as you know, champions of the National League Central Division. Playoffs will begin on Saturday, although nobody knows who's playing who at this point. We have two guests with us, both members of my family. My husband, Mike Bauman, national columnist for MLB.com. Our son, Andrew Dunbauman, who's a student at UWM and an intern at ESPN Radio here in Milwaukee. More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Second with a bang. Swinging a fly ball in the right center and deep. Way back. Get up. Get up. Get out of here and gone for Fielder. And the Brewers have the lead on a towering fly ball to right center that got into Toyota territory. And the rally towels are up. It's 1-0 Brewers. And the pitch, there he goes, swinging a line drive to the gap in left center. Braun with a diving grab has it. Throw back to first, double play. Whoa, you won't see one better than that. Ryan Braun flying to the gap in left center field with a diving catch, scrambled to his feet, and threw a one-hop strike to Fielder. What a play by Ryan Braun, and the inning is over. 2-2 pitch. Here it is. Hey, struck him out swinging, and the inning is over. K-Rod strikes out Stanton and strikes out Morrison to end it. Braun pumping that bat. Now waits.
Just how can you not be thrilled when you're listening to that? Bob Uecker announcing portions of the game on Friday. He is good. You know, as he said, you don't hear one better than that. He's great. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Mike Bauman and Andrew Dunbauman. Rick in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, and thanks for taking the call. I could take up the next 5 minutes if I had a chance, but I originally called when you were talking about fans, but I could actually say stuff about the last calls, too. I'm going tonight, so I was hoping they'd clinch it tonight. Talking about generations, going with my son and my two grandsons.
Oh.
So, yes, it's a great game for that. And what I originally called for was that, the fans are great, but I have been a fan. Maybe I'm getting too old for it, and I've gone to, because I've been going so long, and I've gone to all the parks east of the Mississippi, some west. And what I've seen, especially since 08, is a lot of what I call bandwagon jumpers. It seems worse than ever. Fans are out there to party. I sit a lot of times out in the field bleachers. People heckle the, visiting bullpen, and they, when they're talked to about it, they say that's what they're supposed to do. Yelling at opposing fans, opposing players. I just think it's lost. Like I said, maybe I'm just getting too old for it, but I think it's lost some of the dignity. Baseball always had a dignified fan base.
Mm. Mike.
Yeah, I think there's some of that happening not only here, but elsewhere. And there's a certain kind, there's a kind of negativity in the air that people come out to the ballpark not just to, you know, cheer for their home team, but to, you know, verbally insult somebody else. And that's unfortunate. I think it's more of a societal thing than a baseball thing, but it, you definitely do see more of that than you did in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially out in the Loge bleachers or areas where a lot of people are not really there to pay attention to the game, but rather there to get drunk and be obnoxious about it, which is really unfortunate from a baseball standpoint, from a fan standpoint. You really want to be able to sit anywhere in the park and enjoy the game and really be surrounded by other fans who are there to enjoy the game, and I do think there's a little bit too much of people who are there not to enjoy the game, which is really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Rick mentioned going with his son and with his grandchildren. There is a lot of that in baseball, and I guess, although I don't watch football, there's a lot of that in football, particularly with the Packers in the state of Wisconsin. Do both of you, and will you always remember certain games that you went to? Do you remember your first baseball game? Andrew, Mike, do you remember games, and let's start with you, Mike, that you went to with your kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of my most vivid memories of childhood are my father taking me to Cole County Stadium. And in adulthood, you know, there's taking each one of the boys in turn by himself, you know, when they reached age five, which was like the, well, now he's intellectually capable of watching a baseball game. You know, I've made that decision arbitrarily. But it was always just to see the wonderment in the kid's eyes when you step into the inside of the stadium and you see the green grass and the walls and all the people and all that stuff. That's a really special moment in both directions. And I would have to say, Kathleen, also that in terms of our family, you have come a long, long way. To the point where you first started to assemble the knowledge, and now you not only have the knowledge, but you have the enthusiasm. Whereas when we were first married, you didn't know a sacrifice bunt from a triple.
Thanks for the compliment, Mike.
Actually, it's kind of hardening. You know, I think that's probably one of the reasons this relationship has lasted.
Oh! Either that or it's because you're on the road a lot, right? Just kidding. There you go.
I need you to deal with in that regard.
Andrew, do you remember certain? Do you remember that first game or
I
not?
Do, and actually I think, ironically enough, it was against the Philadelphia Phillies that we
really?
Went to the very first baseball game.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I have a lot of memories from going to games with the family, and we were talking last night. I was telling you a story about how when I was pretty young, 10, 11 years old, I went to a game with my brother, and we were sitting down on the first level on the first base side, and there was a high fly ball that was hit towards us into the stands, and there was a lot of time, and I was sitting under it, had my glove on, I was ready to catch the ball, and it was coming down directly above my head, and my brother reaches over my head, and the ball deflects off his hands and goes and skips away to somebody else in the stands, and after the play was over, all the people around us are congratulating him, saying, hey, good job, you know, protecting your little brother from getting hit by that foul ball, but I was furious with him because I was convinced that I was going to make a catch on the ball and that he had, instead of saving my life, had ruined a chance for a foul ball that I was going to catch. So that was always a funny memory. But it's a great game to go to with your family. I've seen a couple of great moments in Miller Park. Going to the 2008 playoffs was really quite an experience for me because it's really the tension in there. As soon as you step in, it's just a buzz the entire game, and it's nothing I've ever heard at a baseball game before. I was there this season when Ryan Braun signed his contract extension, and the ovation that he got his very first at-bat was something that was really special. It gave me chills.
Yeah.
So there have been hundreds of moments. I've been to quite a few games with my family, and it's nothing I enjoy more than going to a Milwaukee Brewers game.
And you must, even though you have to be very impartial about this, Mike, I know you will be able to cover the Brewers for the playoffs, and maybe even for the World Series, which is a good thing for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, in 2008, there were people in our operation that made the decision that the Brewers in the playoffs wasn't quite important enough for me to watch, and I ended up covering the Cubs and the Dodgers, which was a foregone conclusion. But this time, yes, they've been kind enough to allow me to do it, and I think it was a recognition that this is a better team and they have a legitimate chance to compete and win.
Hmm.
So, yeah, as you said, and I will do my best to be completely impartial, but I realize how big this is.
Oh, sure.
For the people here who have, mm-hmm. you know, been patient and have suffered at times in some long, long seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, I this is a really special occasion for all of us.
Yeah, yeah, times are hard. It's good to have a winning team. Well, I will publicly ask Andrew, because you've got the tickets, can I go to a game with you?
I'm not the one who purchased the ticket, so you have to speak to other powers that be in this situation.
Mike, can I have a ticket?
Thank you, Andrew. we'll discuss it. We'll see. You know.
Whoa! Wait a second, guys.
See, you got brother. Excuse me. My brother was flying in from New York for the playoffs, so things get a little complex.
All right.
You got to play. I think you're in the running. I think you have a strong candidacy. Here.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys. It was a great hour. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Andrew. Mike Bauman, who is a national columnist for MLB.com. My husband and Andrew, our son, who's working as an intern for ESPN while he's going to school. We hope he's going to school at UWM. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be with you again tomorrow.